Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
They are, to me, a really like American version of Radiohead.
All right. Hey, everybody. It is Patrick here. It is another episode of Rockin' the Suburbs. And today we're going to have some more stories from the concert hall, which I know I've been hearing some really nice feedback about the recent episodes we did. And our listeners really like reports about shows. And today, from the Midwest of the United States, it's a voice you'll be familiar with. It's Vasant Ramamurthy. How are you, Vasant?
Good. How are you, Patrick?
I'm doing very well. I appreciate you making some time. We're carving out some time in the afternoon to record this one for you folks, and very much appreciate that. And these are some really interesting shows that you saw in the month of September. Vasant, you went to the Supergrass and TV on the Radio. Was that that was back to back nights? Is that correct?
Right. So this is a first for me, actually. The first time I think I've been to shows on consecutive nights, not in a festival setting. Obviously, those tend to be, you know, over a weekend. But this is the first time I've actually seen two shows in two nights. And ironically, they were both at the same venue, the Riviera.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting. So I just booked my parking spot for like whatever 48 hours straight and just had it set for that, for the venue.
That's great. Just leave your car there. So how big is the theater?
The Riv, I think, is a couple thousand, maybe.
Okay.
It's probably smaller. I think it's around 1,000, maybe, I want to say.
Oh, okay. Okay. So let's start with Supergrass. First of all, what have you been a fan of theirs for a while, or what prompted you to check these guys out?
Yeah, I have. I think I got turned on to them in '97, which is when their album "In It for the Money" came out, and that's a really excellent album. Stephen Routledge always talks about, you know, 1997 being the year of great British albums. So this one is definitely at the top, I would say, along with OK Computer. That Spiritualized album, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Verve, Urban Hymns, I think, is 97 as well. I'm probably forgetting something else. But yeah, so that definitely a good year. So I've liked them ever since then. But this is actually the 30th anniversary of their previous album, that which is called I Should Coco. That's their first album. So that came out in 95. Mm. So they are touring on the 30th anniversary of that. And it's been a while since they've been in the US. I think they haven't actually put out any albums for quite a while. But yeah, and touring has been infrequent and stuff. So I definitely wanted to check it out since I've never seen them before. And this is an album of theirs that I enjoy. So
very cool. Yeah. Interesting. You know, they're one of those bands that I've listened to a lot, but for some reason, never had the opportunity to see them live. So was this one of those shows where they played I Should Coco in its entirety, or was it just a show focused on that album?
Yeah, they didn't play it in order, but they did play, I would say, I think they played almost all the songs from it, if not all of them. And then as well, they scatter and stuff from it, and from the money, and then they have three albums after that, so stuff from that. So yeah, but it was pretty much, I would say, primarily focused on that first album, I Should Coco.
So how was it?
Yeah, it was great. I'd never seen them, so I think pretty much have had the same lineup since the beginning, four-piece band. So yeah, very energetic, and it's a good show. I was in the balcony in the Riv, which I enjoy because it has seats, so able to stay seated the entire show, which is good at my age. And yeah, so good show.
And with an entire album plus other stuff, How long was the set?
It wasn't that long a show. I mean, like, because their songs are pretty short, like, you know, three, 4 minutes tops. So, I don't know, the usual, like, an hour and a half standard set wasn't too late or anything. So, yeah, the right ideal time, I would say, for a show.
I don't know if we've talked about this, and maybe we may have mentioned it sort of peripherally on the podcast, you know, here and there, but did they play encores?
They did. Yeah. I think it was just one encore, but yeah, they did. Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel in general about bands playing encores?
I mean, I think we're kind of stuck with it. It's kind of a silly thing that, you know, everyone pretty much knows if they're going to come out. So I actually kind of respect bands that just say either straight up, "We are coming out," so, you know.
Yep.
Or they just straight up say, "No, we're not coming out. This is our last song," and leave it like that. So I've seen some bands do one or the other. Yeah. But yeah.
I like that too. I like when you know what it is. I mean, if you've played 20 songs and you want to take a break, you know, for 15 or 10 minutes, that's no problem. You know, go get a drink, towel off.
I saw Wilco over the summer, and that was straight up just like two sets, so that was a longer show, but like they basically did separate it into like two sets, and I think they just did one small encore after the second set. But yeah,
interesting.
So some bands will delineate it like that as well.
Okay, cool. So Supergrass, very nice. So the next night you're back at the Riviera Theater for TV on the Radio.
Yes. And one thing while we were talking, I did check the RIV capacity is 2,500. So that gives you an idea of, so, you
500.
Know,
okay.
You can get the mid-level bands. Yeah. So TV on the radio, I would say the RIV was actually a small venue for them because this show sold out pretty fast. Whereas the Supergrass show still had tickets, I think. This one sold out pretty immediately because I think there's a lot of demand there. This is one of my favorite bands, I would say, of this millennium. I love them a lot.
Okay.
I think they are to me really like the sort of American version of Radiohead in terms of just the kind of creativity and pushing things forward on their albums. Yeah, so it's like a 5-album catalog, I think. But they again have not put out anything since, I think it was 2014 was the last album, and then they also have not toured as much in recent past, but for whatever reason they started touring again, I think last year. So I'd only seen them, I'd seen them before at Riot Fest here in Chicago. I think it was maybe 2018 or 19, but again, that's in a festival setting, and I was kind of far away from the stage, not really the best place to see some bands, especially theirs, where it's, you know, kind of more nuanced sounds and stuff. So yeah, I'm happy to see them in a smaller place this time.
Very cool. And yeah, they took a hiatus for several years, right? So I can definitely imagine that the interest in their music is or interest in seeing them play live is pretty strong, right? Because wasn't it about a decade or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Like the 2014, I think, was the last album. And then they also had like a band member pass away around then. And then the lead singer, Tunde, I think he put out a solo album last year. And so they're busy with various stuff. And then one of the other guys, Dave Sitek, who's like one of the other main collaborators in the band, he actually is not touring. He just made a choice not to tour. So it's basically like the three of them plus some other guest musicians filling in
okay.
for this tour. But yeah.
And how was their performance?
Yeah, it was great. Like they,
was it?
Sort of hit everything from all their catalog, and then of course played Wolf Like Me, which is a great song from their second record there. I'm sure people have seen the YouTube performances of that on Letterman and whatnot, yeah. Various shows. So yeah, everyone loves that song. But yeah, I was kind of amazed because I mean I haven't talked to that many people who are into them, but like you could just see there's people, like most of the people there are like really into them, just like singing along and going crazy for most of the songs. So I think that it sort of explains how it sold out so fast. They definitely have a very dedicated cult audience. And I think I probably guess it skews younger just because they're, you know, from the 2000s. So, know, 20, 30 year olds is my guess, you know.
That makes sense. And I think, and I am with you. I'm a big fan of their music, and always have been. I think the music they were making in I'm thinking of Return to Cookie Mountain and the first album, Desperate Youth, I think it might be called. But those were forward-thinking records musically. I mean, even though they came out in 2004 and 2006, you know, they sounded advanced to me anyway. That's one thing I always, I always loved about them. What would you say is your favorite period of the band's music?
You know, honestly, I like all the albums equally, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, even the last album, the one without the band member passed away, Seeds, that's like, yeah, such a good album. So honestly, you could pick any of them. I would say the first one is maybe the weakest, but like, you know, the albums 2 through 5 are all just exceptional stuff.
Yeah, I remember Return to Cookie Mountain being a big breakthrough for them and you know, just kind of taking them to another level, which is where they are. So cool. Supergrass and TV on the Radio, two bands, you know, that have been around for a while, but are both, that you saw them in September. That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Stone.
Were there any opening acts of note for either of the groups?
Yeah, although I did catch the TV on the radio opener. I forget the lady's name, but they had a lady singing sort of acoustic folky songs. For TV on the radio. And then for Supergrass, I did not, I was not able to catch that band. Right? I think it's a British band called Sports, maybe, or... It's one of the British bands where they have just the name of some regular household object or thing, whatever.
Right.
Band name. So I don't remember what the band name was now.
Yeah, Elbow or stuff like that.
Yeah. English teacher.
Yeah, exactly. The editors. All right. Very cool. Now, we're going to move on, folks, and talk about a band that I think is dear to both Vasant and myself. And they were a band called Silkworm, or a band called Silkworm. And they recorded a lot of albums in the 90s and up until, I guess, the early 2000s, basically, about a 10-year recording career. And they put out their albums on several different labels when they first began. And then I think they settled in with Matador and Touch and Go, somewhere between those two. And a Chicago band who did a lot of work with Steve Albini as the producer. And yes, they're loud and they have certain elements that they share with, you know, noisy, powerful Chicago bands, but they're also a band with like tremendous heart and, you know, tremendous lyrics that really touch you. And the combination between those two things for me has always made it very special. I don't know, is that anywhere close, Vasant, to kind of where you're coming from with Silkworm?
It is very hard to describe them. There's definitely a post-punk influence, but then there's a lot of CCR and Neil Young that kind of influence. They have covered Fleetwood Mac the Chain, which is actually a good version of that song. But then they've also covered Comset Angels, which was a British post-punk band from the early 80s. So that kind of gives you an idea. It is hard to describe their music. Yeah. But yeah, you're right about the lyrics as well. They're a very interesting lyrical band. Some songs are very funny. There's a song on one of their albums called Miracle Mile, which they sort of describe this mishaps of touring, and like some like a homeless guy broke into their van and stuff. It's just a funny song, like the way they describe it.
In a bad dream, I was locked out on love. I got stuck in the slipstream until I lucked out. For once, in the sky behind this club, I saw her face high rise. If you didn't want to lose it on that miracle mile, but we played at CBGB on the 4th of July at 3 a.m. The soundman wanted to kill us, and he was strung out on X-Lax. He was fucked in his lungs. He got shot out on Avenue A while sucking on some slut's tongue. He would dress up like a whore just to get lucky once in a while. I didn't want to lose it on that miracle mile, but then we played at the Knitting Factory for 15 people, $30, and someone broke into the goddamn truck. He had shit in his pants. He had a needle in his arm. He just stole a couple sleeping bags that he needed to stay warm. But he couldn't even walk. We found him crawling in a garbage pile. I didn't want to lose it on that mile, but we met with even greater misfortune in the armpit of the Americas. Four dumb hicks us from hunger. We got ripped off by these assholes at a Ford Lee garage. They didn't weld that motherfucking leaf spring. No, the spark.
You know, when you combine it with sort of the power that they had, it's really a great combination. So there's albums out there to listen to, folks. I particularly like all of them. But Libertine is a great early one. And the interesting thing about this band is that there was a founding member called Joel R.L. Phelps, who was in the band in the early days and was with them all the way up until Libertine, I think, was the last album he appeared on. And then he left the group. But he's playing back with them. Is that right, Vasant?
Right, yeah. Joel was there the first couple albums, and then basically I can give a brief history of the band. So yeah, they started out in Montana, of all places, Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
And then that's sort of where they became acquainted with Albini, because he is from Montana as well. And then they were in Seattle briefly after that, and then they relocated to Chicago for like various education and job reasons during the 90s. And basically, so after Joel was there the first couple of albums, he left around 93, and then they stayed a three-piece the whole time. And then, as you mentioned, put out a few albums on Matador, put out a few albums in Touch and Go. They were never like the top, you know, bands on those labels. Like obviously Matador, Pavement, and Guided by Voices, and bands like that were more popular. And Touch and Go, you had like Shellac and other bands who were sort of bigger, but they're sort of that, they're really your a band's favorite band, kind of, you know, cult band on those labels. And then what happened was, it tragically, in like 2005, their drummer was killed in a car accident along with two other guys by some lady was trying to commit suicide by driving her car like extremely high speed on the road, and she crashed into their car and these three guys died. And they said that was the end of the band. The other two guys in the band,
yeah, you know,
couldn't continue with the band at that point. So, you know, as of 2005, that was the end of Silkworm pretty much. And they did some other projects in the years after that. But then Albini, what passed away last year, right? Steve Albini, 2024, I think it was.
Yes.
And so there was a memorial service over the summer where, you know, everybody in his history came together and sort of performed and stuff. And so the two of the remaining members of Silkworm, and actually Joel as well, so I guess three, they, since they were so tight with Albini, they came together and wanted to perform some songs for him and his family. So that was sort of the genesis of this reunion, was that. So they it went well at that memorial function, and so mm-hmm. they decided to pull in a new drummer that they were familiar with and basically start playing shows again as Silkworm. So yeah, so like for me, I've seen them before. I saw them in like 2002 and then 2005, but this was well after Joel left. So for me and a lot of people, I would say they themselves are saying that like most people have never seen this incarnation of the band with Joel, because
yeah.
back when they were, when he was in the band, you know, 1992, 93, like they were not popular at all. And they were just, you know, playing shows to like, you know, less than 30, you know, 40 people. So like really right. the amount of people who ever saw this incarnation of the band is very few. So it really is a yep. new band for a lot of people, myself included. So that's sort of what's interesting about this whole thing.
That's very, very interesting. And what kind of material did they play? I know that you sent me a photo and talked about the first song right out of the gate, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, they pretty much played songs from the entire catalog. The way Silkworm works, usually the person who wrote the song sings it. So they have three singers, which is unique as well. But they also let Joel sing some of the songs that were written and recorded after he left the band. So he sang on a couple that were not technically his songs. Oh, so it nice. Was basically, yeah, like career spanning. And because they have such a large catalog, so they actually played like three nights in Chicago. I only went to one. They played three nights in Chicago. They played one night in a club near in Champaign, which is a little bit downstate from here. And then they also played Goner Fest in Memphis. And there were, at least between the Chicago shows, there's not much repeats because they have quite a large catalog. They're able to, you know, do a good set without duplicating too much. So that was cool as well. So, you know, there were some people who went to like all three shows in Chicago, and you basically got a different, basically a different set list every night.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Yeah. It, I mean, I can imagine putting, you know, if they go to rehearse to figure out what they want to play, there are so many great songs to choose from. I mean, you, literally, you could write out a list of 50 from these albums that you would want to hear. So did you hear the things you wanted to hear, or what were some highlights from the show?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they, like my favorite two albums of theirs are called Lifestyle and Italian Platinum. Those are the two more later ones on Touch and Go. So they played stuff from that, but then they also played stuff from Firewater, which is the first one of Matador, which I like a lot. And then as well, from the two before that, Libertine in the West, that where Joel was in the band. So yeah, they really played, and then they even played stuff from their last album and EP, which was cool. Yeah, this was at Sleeping Village, which is a pretty small club. This is only like a, you know, 200 cap room. So I really like seeing shows there. So yeah, it's a very intimate setting, and it was a very like a sort of a familial atmosphere. Like they had like name tag stickers out that you could like basically write down your name. Cause like a lot of it is, you know, people from the Chicago scene were in, and then a lot of people came from like, out of town. So it really is like a sort of a cult family atmosphere and at the show and stuff. Yeah, so
that's very cool. I love that idea. Yeah, maybe, and especially nowadays, there, you know, there may be people that know each other from, you know, fan communities online or, you know, whatever. So that's a great idea too. Yeah. So exciting and encouraging that Silkworm are playing again. I hope they keep it up.
Yeah, they've announced a few other shows. They're playing.
Oh, okay.
They are playing Louisville, Atlanta, and I think somewhere in South Carolina as well.
Okay.
So a couple more shows in the South that they're doing. So we'll see what happens next year. They might do more East Coast, West Coast. Who knows?
Yeah, it would be great. I mean, I would love to see them in this incarnation. Harris King alert. Also, if you're going to be in South Carolina, watch out, Harris. I interestingly saw Silkworm, the three-piece, after Joel had left the band, and then once saw Joel himself play a solo show in Washington for his album Warm Springs Night. And that was very interesting, too, at a very small place where the band was set up, I remember, by the door. And every time somebody, you know, it wasn't easy to just sort of walk out. You had to sort of walk in front of the stage and pass the band. And I know, you know, several people have walked out during the show, and Joel just had a very sad look on his face, I remember, every time somebody walked out. So I can imagine that's a tough thing to play. Most, I mean, if you slip out the back door when a band's playing, it's not a big deal. But when you got to pass by them, that's totally different. There must have been a lot of with all those fans there. There must have been a lot of you know, requests for certain things. Was that the case that people were yelling stuff out, or did they just keep playing and everybody was drinking in everything they could get?
Yeah, there weren't many requests like that because I think. People knew that, you know, that I mean, the catalog's so big, right? They're pretty much over the various nights, they're going to get to most of it, I guess, and play the
right, true,
the favorites. But yeah, I mean, everybody loves most of it. So yeah, it's all good, I guess.
Yeah. I can't see anything they're pulling out being bad or not something you don't want to hear. That's for sure. So that's great. I'm so excited about Silkworm and kind of as you and I have been messaging each other a little bit over the over this time, kind of gotten back into listening to some of their stuff. So I'm excited about that, too. And I think if anybody hasn't gotten into Silkworm, I don't know, what would you say, Vasan? Is there a place that you would recommend that somebody would start with them? It is a big catalog, and but most of it did come out in about a decade span. So there certainly is a lot to choose from.
Yeah, I would say that the ones that I mentioned that I like, Italian Platinum and Lifestyle, those are on Touch and Go, both recorded by Albini. Those are really good ones. Pretty much, yeah, and that and Firewater, which is on Matter, those are probably the best ones. I think you got the Albini production. They're sort of the song's a little bit catchier, easier to get into.
Yeah.
The last two Touch and Go albums, they started incorporating keyboards and stuff. It's a little bit more of a popular sound, guest vocalists, things like that. Like Kelly Hogan sings on one of the songs on Italian Platinum. So yeah, that's probably the most successful ones, I would say.
Totally agree with you there. And Firewater's got a great album cover as well. So check that out when you get a chance. It's something you just look at and go, what the?
It's a concept album about drinking. So that should sell it right there.
Yeah, there you go. And it does have Miracle Mile on it, as well as a great song that I love, Don't Make Plans This Friday. That's definitely a Silkworm song you should listen to if you haven't. Excellent. Man, I want to go listen to some Silkworm right now. Anyway, lots to explore from Silkworm. So thank you, Vasant, so much for this concert report. And it sounds like you got to see some great music over a pretty close period of time. So I appreciate you reporting back to us on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Three per month is usually above my standard. I usually only see one every month or two. So kind of got bunched up together here. But that's good.
Yep. Sometimes you got no choice when they're all right there in front of you. So do you have anything else before we let you go on the concert schedule?
I do. I have end of October, going to see My Morning Jacket. They're playing their album Z in full, because I believe it's the 20th anniversary of that. And then in November, I again have a back-to-back night concert thing, which ended up happening. So one night... Yeah, I know, twice in 1 year. Who would expect it after never having done it before? These are two very different shows. One is Belly. Belly is touring on the end. Must be the 30th anniversary of King, their album.
Okay.
And then the next night is the Saints, the Australian punk band with Mark Arm is on vocals now, since Chris Bailey passed away a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's like Ed Cooper and some other guy, the other guy from the band, with Mark Arm on vocals. So that should be a cool show.
Excellent.
There's two more. One is Burning Airlines, which is a J. Robbins project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's playing Burning Airlines song. That's in December. And then there is a guitarist that I like a lot called Hayden Pettigo. He's been getting some more buzz this year. Sort of plays acoustic, Fahey style guitar. So,
nice.
Going to see him as well in November. So,
excellent. I'll have to check him out. I haven't heard of him. Very good. Well, Vasan, if you keep going to these back-to-back shows, we're going to have to keep doing these concert wrap-ups. So that's the added onus you're putting on yourself there. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Very lucky that you got to see all this great music. And thank you very much for sharing it with us. Hopefully, we'll make some new Silkworm fans, if nothing else, after this.
Yeah, so. That'd be great. Yep.
All right. Well, folks, you're always welcome to get in touch with us. If you have seen a show that you want to talk about, or just send a note, you can send an email to rocketsuburbspod.com. You can get in touch with us on social media. We're at suburbspod across all those places. And you can always stick your head out the window and yell. That usually works. Somebody will come eventually. Vasant, thank you very much. Happy concert going, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Absolutely. We'll talk to everybody later. Particularly like all of them.